Book of Ezekiel is a very interesting book, and also, in a way, a little strange book, too. The part that was just read is in 47 chapter out of 48 chapters of the book. And Book of Ezekiel was written by Ezekiel, not in Jerusalem, but in Babylon, when they were in captive. So for them, in a way, all the hope was gone. In one way, why? The great temple was destroyed. The ark was lost. And all the leaders are kept in captive in a foreign land. And there's no assurance that they may return to the land. And this part is ending part of something called the restoration of the land to the people. So this whole series of visions that Ezekiel get to see, led by an angel, showing that how Jerusalem and the temple will be restored to yet even more glorious way. And this particular chapter has this amazing, almost supernatural powered river, which you read about it in another book, which is at the end of the Bible, Book of Revelation, the last chapter. Almost the last description is about the river of life flowing from the sanctuary, throne of God. On the banks, they have trees of life. The leaves of that will be used to heal people. What was in this whole vision for the people of Judah? It was a hope. The message was about hope. One day, they will be restored. And for them, that was good enough. So, what is your hope in God? That is my question to you to contemplate. That's my first talk. One of the stories that I read in a book called Zen Speaks, it's about kind of very simplified version of two different kinds of life. So there once upon a time ago, there was a rich man who was the richest in the whole town. And he possessed basically most of the land that belongs to the whole town. So during the daytime, he acts and lived like the king in the whole village. However, in his sleep, somehow he turns into this very poor, miserable slave, and he suffers and works all day in his sleep. So, when it happens over and over again, his daytime even became not really happy anymore, because he was so concerned and worried that he'll have another nightmare tonight. And he had a servant, a slave man, basically who has to work from dawn till dusk for this rich man, with just enough to feed himself and his small family. But in his dreams, he is a noble man and served by many servants, and he does whatever he can do and enjoy the world. So, even during the daytime, he's humming, because he knows in the nighttime he'll have a fantastic dream. Mm-hmm. Well, I know it's kind of made-up story, but at the end, who was living happier life? Right? Isn't that amazing and odd? And we find quite similar stories probably in our lives too. Sometimes we feel like we can add happiness and joy and peace to us by acquiring something that belongs to this world. That may be a higher position, more money, or something else. And yet, we acknowledge and realize that that doesn't really help. And in other times, some people just try to alter their mind and thinking that if I just believe it's true, it may become true. That's not really true either. It's called act of imagination that helps you for a while. But your mind actually needs something that is solid and concrete to actually feel real. So in your heart, how do you actually have the ground, permanent ground of happiness or joy or contentness or peace? And either you agree with me or not, that secret is written in this story. I find this story quite amazing in this. John 12, 22, 26. This is the story or happening that happens right after Jesus enters Jerusalem with such a majestic way. If you're a storyteller or reader, you know that every story has a kind of sequence. And if something happens right after this one might have also something connected to it. Or the one comes before has 100 degree of importance that the one follows may have something quite similar. Interestingly, right after the entrance into the Jerusalem on a Palm Sunday, that's what we call this, what happens is that a few Greeks come to see Jesus. Kind of out of blue. I love this story because very odd story. If you really read it carefully, it gets even better. And they don't just come to see Jesus. It looks like Jesus now has a line of people like protecting him. That's unlike him. Remember that even beggars can come to see him and talk to him? That's how Jesus is. Jesus is not surrounded by bodyguards and protected by his disciples, that people have to come through his disciples to see him. And this is exactly how that looks like. The Greeks first come to a disciple named Philip. And Philip has to take the Greeks to talk to Andrew. And with Andrew and Philip together, they go to Jesus. You may not find it odd, but to me it's really strange. Because Jesus is the person who would sit with anyone and eat and drink with them. He doesn't have any sense of hierarchy and self-importance saying that if somebody wants to see me, you have to make an appointment kind of attitude. Or, oh, first you need to screen by my disciples so that you are important enough, I'll see you. That's not Jesus. But this somehow looks like that's how it is. Why? That was my first question. Philip, such a famous name. The name itself means lover of horses. Horses. The one who loves horses. Something we call Swedenborgian correspondences, horses symbolize understanding. Understanding, inquiry for knowledge and truth. And the one who loves it is Philip. And Andrew, his name stands for someone who is manly. Like, but Andrew also represents charity. Action, act of goodness. So in this scene, in a kind of summary, Greeks coming to see Jesus could be said as us trying to meet God. How do you meet God? And the first entrance or first step for us is we want to understand. We want to understand the teachings, the truth, and followed by action, act of the truth. Then we come before Jesus. And you know what it did? Jesus answered them. That's what the scripture says. Who asked the question? No one asked the question here. Okay, they just came to see Jesus, and they're standing before him, and somehow John perceived it as they asked the question. So Jesus answered them. In a way of saying, maybe just address to them, talk to them. Somehow, Jesus perceived a question that was not spoken, or something triggered in him. And he uses this very famous phrase saying, "The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified." Isn't that really out of blue? Greeks came to see him. Not the Jews, not his disciples, Greeks came to see him. The first thing Jesus would say to Greeks is that the hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. And it goes, "Very truly, I tell you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains just a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much, much fruit." I, with all my heart, would love to share with you everything that I found in this beautiful story. I am really troubled that I cannot. That'll take a long time. But this beautiful story captures somehow the whole message that Jesus wants to give to humanity in his last week. This is almost the first day of his last week on earth. And he acknowledges that his time has come. He foresees his coming death and the torture and all that. He's willing to accept it. The message somehow shifts that. But yet, message captured into this interesting and great story of a grain of wheat. A seed. You may say, well, seed going to earth is so natural thing, so why would seed resist it? And you know what God will say to us? Loving each other should be just natural to you. Why are you resisting it? We are created in the image and likeness of God. The very humanity itself is the capacity to receive what is of God, which is good and which is true. Yet, we resist against it lifelong, or we have to work so hard to embody it. So it almost sounds like a grain of wheat refusing to go to the ground because I want to stay as I am, and I love being a grain of wheat. And yet, the beauty and the miracle of a grain of wheat going into the ground, earth, it doesn't die, actually. It says it dies, but actually, it doesn't die. It transforms into something that is actually alive and growing, and actually even yielding many grains of wheat. So one core part that I really wanted to share with you was captured in that, a grain of wheat. When I was reading it over and over again, I totally see myself as this grain of wheat. Whenever I refuse to do something that is good, even though I know it's a good thing, and it'll take something of me, so I refuse. Or I make all kinds of excuses for why I shouldn't have to do this. And yet, within heart, I do know this is the right thing to do. Why? Because I can even see that it'll create more if I do this. Like actually, yeah, my children, one of the things that my wife and I were trying to teach them is after you play, you clean. They really make a huge mess in our living room. Actually. That's their battleground. So literally speaking, if you try to walk into our living room in the dark, you will get hurt. Because there are some spiky, pokey things on the floor and it'll touch the very soft side of your foot. But if they clean it, it's not just benefit for us. Well, they can recreate different play. And they can find all the items they claim to be lost. You know? They come to you and complain about, like, we lost this, daddy, find it. And when we clean all the living room, everything just comes out to the light. Was it this corner or hidden underneath the other toy? But they somehow resist that cleaning because they think it's not fun. So somehow they just pre-program themselves, even as young as 4 years old or 9 years old, that cleaning is not fun, but making a mess is fun. I mean, how is it that way? It just amazes me, actually. You know? And looking into bigger human community and how adults do, I see resemblance of that all over. Somehow, we love making messes. But nobody really wants to clean up. If I'm willing to clean up my own mess, and if each one of us are willing to do that, I'm sure our community will become much, much better place. Even just the cleaning. There are many other things. So in this, just one small piece of message that I really want to emphasize is one of those times, you know there's something that you want, believe, know to do, yet you feel resistance in your heart, remember this. A grain of wheat must go into the earth and has to die. Then it will grow back again in a whole plant and yield many, many grains of wheat. May God bless you all in this journey and in this effort in your spiritual cultivation. Amen. Mm-hmm.